from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The Commonwealth elects a new Secretary General and at the Durban summit, a Caribbean call to deal with poverty. Dissidents make their voices heard as Cuba hosts a gathering of leaders of the Spanish-speaking world. And Guyana's concerned that it's losing the battle against rising sea levels. I'm Debbie Ransom and this is BBC Caribbean Report. The first day of the Commonwealth Heads of Government Summit has ended with the election of Don McKinnon as the new Secretary General. For the latest from Durban, here's Greg Barrow.
The New Zealand Foreign Minister, Don McKinnon, has now been confirmed as the successor to Chief Emeka Anyoku as Secretary General of the Commonwealth. Mr. McKinnon has worked on a Commonwealth ministerial group monitoring human rights, particularly in Nigeria, and he's also respected for his role in securing a peace agreement on the Papua New Guinean island of Bougainville after 9 years of civil war. He'll take up his post in April next year, by which time the Commonwealth may still be preoccupied with the position of Pakistan following the military coup last month. Heads of state have been considering the contents of a report from the Commonwealth Ministerial Action Group, which visited Pakistan shortly after the coup. A spokesman for the Commonwealth Secretariat said there was lively debate among delegates on whether further action should be taken against Pakistan. He said the leaders of member states had raised the issue of whether there were what could be termed good or bad military coups, and there had not been universal condemnation of the military takeover. No final decision has been made on Pakistan, but delegates suggest that for the time being at least, no further censure is likely to take place beyond suspending the country from the councils of the Commonwealth.
Greg Barrow. As you just heard, last month's military coup in Pakistan is at the top of the summit agenda. But the problems and potential benefits of free trade for the developing world are also being addressed by delegates. The Deputy Foreign Minister of South Africa, Aziz Pahad, said the organisation was an ideal place to deal with such issues.
The challenge of the next century is, how do you deal with globalization and its impact on the less developed countries? And I think the Commonwealth is an excellent forum for discussing this and trying to see how we can deal with this problem.
Aziz Pahad of South Africa. The need to address the concerns of developing nations was also highlighted by Jamaican Prime Minister PJ Patterson. He told the summit that the nations of the Commonwealth must recognise who and what they are, 4 developed and 50 developing countries. Mr. Patterson also pointed out that the grouping includes many of the world's highly indebted poor countries.
And poverty constitutes a living reality for the majority of our people. If the Commonwealth fails to demonstrate a constant concern with questions of development and a passionate attention to issues of poverty, it will lose relevance to that majority. The Commonwealth embraces people in the streets, in the rural areas, and poverty is the major challenge to them. How to secure a roof, food, a job, medicine, who will look after them in their old age? These are the issues to which the Commonwealth has to respond, and our agenda has to be heavy in addressing these concerns.
The Jamaican leader said the same kind of resolute action used to defeat apartheid should lead to a similar resolve in eradicating poverty from every household within Commonwealth nations.
Why do we not hear in Durban, where the Indian Ocean washes the African shore, commit ourselves to specific targets for the first decade of the new millennium? To rid every corner of this great Commonwealth from the pollution of poverty, to eradicate hunger, ignorance and disease from every city and village within our borders.
PJ Patterson speaking in South Africa earlier today. So just how much impact did the Jamaican leader make as a result of his speech at the opening of the summit? That's the question I put to the BBC's Julian Marshall in Durban.
Well, he was a keynote speaker at the opening session of the summit, and I'm absolutely convinced that his remarks will have struck a resonance with other Caribbean states and indeed other smaller states. In his speech, he referred to the fact that the Commonwealth Ministerial Mission, chaired by Prime Minister Owen Arthur of Barbados, has succeeded in placing the concerns of small economies firmly on the agenda of international financial monetary organizations. And I think that there is a general sense at this summit that a greater interest is being paid to the needs of the smaller states and the need to integrate them into more general Commonwealth policy making, and in particular in the run-up to the WTO summit in Seattle.
Now, Peter Patterson did make the point that the Commonwealth is actually a group of 50 developing countries and 4 developed nations. But there in Durban, do you get any sense that developing country issues are high on the agenda?
Oh, yes, I think very much so. I think that South Africa is an interesting example of the way in which within the one country you have a developed and a developing economy existing alongside each other. And I think that the Commonwealth leaders, more so than, say, 2 years ago in Edinburgh, a summit which I also attended, seem to be turning their attention to the needs of the smaller nations. I wouldn't say that it was the theme dominating the summit, but it definitely is a subcurrent, if you like.
Now, Julian, have the leaders dealt with the issue of Pakistan and moved on to other business?
No, I'm afraid that it still is preoccupying them. They have spent the whole of today, Friday, in their plenary sessions. They've had a couple of those, discussing Pakistan and discussing increasing the powers of the Commonwealth Ministerial Action Group. This, of course, was the group that went to Pakistan to try to get a timetable for the return to democracy from General Pervez Musharraf, but unsuccessfully. They want to increase the powers of that group, but there's obviously quite a lot of debate going on inside the Commonwealth, within the leadership, as to how much extra powers it should be given.
Well, stay on the line, Julian, while we hear from the new Secretary General.
I can assure you it'll be filled with great warmth and enthusiasm in New Zealand, having lost the rugby, the cricket, the netball, and the many other sports this year. Hopefully this is seen as one small victory for our country. But more seriously, for those that have given me support in the 2.5 years that this, I suppose, campaign has been running, I do appreciate it.
That was Don McKinnon, the new Commonwealth Secretary General. Julian, any sense of where Mr. McKinnon will be taking the Commonwealth in the next century?
Well, he certainly seems to feel very strongly that the Commonwealth has an image problem, that it doesn't have a high enough profile even within its member states, let alone within the international community. And I suspect that he's going to be rather more aggressive in promoting the Commonwealth than was his predecessor, Chief Emeka Anyoku.
Julian Marshall in Durban. Meanwhile, the Spanish-speaking equivalent of the Commonwealth, the Ibero-American grouping, meet in Cuba this weekend. The King of Spain and heads of state from Latin America and Portugal are arriving in Havana for the annual Ibero-American Summit. It's the first time Fidel Castro has hosted the meeting, but as Tom Gibb reports, this year not all countries are attending.
The presidents of Chile and Argentina are staying away to protest Spain's attempts to extradite General Pinochet. The presidents of Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and El Salvador are not coming because they don't like Cuba's one-party state. Fidel Castro blamed the United States for placing pressure on them and trying to sabotage the summit. The presidents are expected to sign a declaration which condemns the U.S. embargo against Cuba, but also commits them to democracy and political pluralism. Government opponents on the island say it's hypocrisy for Fidel Castro to sign this, but the Cuban government argues that its one-party system is more democratic than Western models. In the last week, however, Fidel Castro has made it abundantly clear that Cuba's version of pluralism does not include any form of public protest. On Tuesday, a small group of dissidents who tried to stage a protest in a Havana park were immediately surrounded by government supporters, who drowned them out. Several of the dissidents were beaten and chased down surrounding streets before being arrested. Yesterday, Fidel Castro went on television and accused them of being part of US-backed attempts to sabotage the summit. He warned any further attempts at protest during the summit would be punished. No one has impunity, now or at any other time, he said, thumping the table. We cannot allow ourselves to be tolerant with them. At present, at least 40 dissidents are in detention or under house arrest, according to the Opposition Human Rights Commission. The dissidents deny they oppose the Ibero-American summit taking place in Havana. Indeed, they say it gives them an opportunity. The prime ministers of Spain and Portugal, as well as the heads of delegation from three Latin American countries, say they'll meet dissident leaders while they're in Havana. The Cuban government has said that visiting leaders are free to meet with whom they like while on the island. For BBC Caribbean Report, this is Tom Gibb in Havana.
In Guyana, the government plans to release proposals on how it will deal with rising sea levels, which are threatening major coastal areas. The head of the country's presidential secretariat, Roger Luncheon, gave a sense of the scale of the problem when he spoke to the media today. A study on the country's sea defences, published earlier this week, stated that Guyana is losing its war against the sea. Colin Smith reports from Georgetown.
Dr. Luncheon agreed that there are serious threats to the sea defences along Guyana's 270-mile coastline. He said the careful study of areas of weakness is now determining the magnitude of the government's response in terms of increased allocations and a greater involvement of the donor community. He gave the assurance that the government will soon be releasing a timetable of how it plans to deal with the situation.
So the weak areas, the threatened areas, would attract priority, and projects to address those weakened areas and threatened areas will be given priority, and then the overall improvement in the sea defenses, generally strengthening and raising the height of the sea defense barriers, that will also be part and parcel of the next wave of sea defense projects.
The Guyana coastland, which extends 25 miles inland, is 5 feet below sea level. More than 70% of the population lives along the coast. The struggle to keep out the Atlantic Ocean is a constant one. The government has just been informed, however, that it is losing that battle, something it may have suspected after recently increasing instances of flooding at high tides. The just-released results of a study of the country's sea defenses pointed to the need for a coast zone management program. The study notes that the sea level is rising, the sea bottom is eroding, waves are increasing, and mangroves are receding. No measurements are being done on how these will affect the sea defense either. The gamble the Guyana government is taking, the study says, is like that of a blindfolded man. Colin Smith in Georgetown, Guyana for BBC Caribbean Report.
Monday is D-Day for workers at the cash-strapped airline Liat. Company management will outline what they call a manpower downsizing plan. The idea, based on a series of recommendations from an independent company, is to turn around the airline through job cuts and a reduction of the fleet and operations. Last week, unions representing Liat workers put together an alternative restructuring proposal. After hearing the management plan on Monday, the unions will meet in St. Lucia next Wednesday. They're expected to give their response to Liat bosses at the end of next week. The island-hopping airline Liat, a vital link for Eastern Caribbean states, has run up annual operation losses of $30 million EC dollars and owes Caribbean governments millions more. Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands arrives in the Caribbean tomorrow for what has been described as a working visit. She'll go to the five islands of the Netherlands Antilles as well as Aruba. From Dutch St. Martin, Mike Jarvis has this report.
Officially, it's being described as a working visit. Queen Beatrix will be in the Netherlands Antilles from this Saturday to Monday, November 22nd, following which she leaves for Aruba before returning to Holland. It's part of a schedule of visits the Dutch Queen pays to the Caribbean part of the Dutch Kingdom about once every 5 years. Although she's not expected to make any public pronouncements, the Queen will, however, meet with federal and local government representatives as well as social groups in the various islands. Her schedule also includes tours of Dutch and locally funded projects. It's just purely coincidental that the visit of Queen Beatrix comes on the heels of the formation of a new federal government in the Netherlands Antilles. The trip was scheduled long before. However, in her meetings with federal and local government officials, as well as community leaders, she will no doubt be briefed on the general state of affairs in the islands. These include the financial situation, social conditions, and most likely a clause in the new federal government's coalition agreement, removing existing immigration restrictions on Dutch Europeans and eventually all European citizens wishing to resettle in the Netherlands Antilles.
Mike Jarvis, and that's it for this edition of BBC Caribbean Report. More news on Monday morning. I'm Debbie Ransom, saying goodbye from London.